expected Reading to come away from Pride Park with anything of substance on Saturday afternoon, and yet the 2-1 defeat that unfolded has certainly generated plenty of debate about Jose Gomez and the best way for the Royals to attain safety from relegation. Welcome to episode 182 of the Tireless Den podcast with your host Mark Mayo, where we'll be discussing kind of what went wrong, what went a bit right for Reading as well in Derby, and maybe what Jose Gomez needs to change or perhaps stick through in the next couple of weeks as we really take on some big relegation crunch matches. And to do that with me this afternoon are two of the Tylerson's finest minds in all things Reading Football Club. And joining me is Simeon Pickup, aka Bucks Royal, the editor of the Tylerson. How's it going, mate?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm not too bad, thank you. Actually, I didn't make the trip all the way up to Derby yesterday. The trains were a little bit stingy, so I enjoyed some non-league football down at Maidenhead instead. So I managed to get my fill of a team also battling relegation and suffering last-minute defeat. So it really was perhaps a busman's holiday in that respect. And also joining weekend preview host Ollie Allen. How's it going, mate?
Very well, thanks, Mark. How are you?
Yeah, good, thank you. I think just one more word before we move on to the Derby recap I'll make is the Patreon campaign, as ever, continues to be chugging along, shall we say, for the Tireless Den. It's always that little virtual tip jar that we have as a way of people saying thanks to us, and every little email and every little tweet and stuff that we get, especially for the mailbag and whatnot, always just shows us that we're hopefully going in the right direction. Any comments or thoughts on the show, obviously, if you donating to the Patreon, we'll always be happy to hear from you and anyone who listens to the show as well. Always very happy for those comments and thoughts and reviews to come in via Twitter or Facebook or thetirelessden@gmail.com. So without further ado, let's crack on then and into the recap.
The Tireless Den podcast. By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
2-1 defeat then for Reading at Pride Park. Bit of an odd one, as I sort of mentioned in the introduction, and perhaps a case of back to the old days in a large sense, guys, because 65% possession, 83% pass success rate. This is a bit of a hark back to a bygone era almost that Jose Gomez has taken us through. And the only problem that I kind of worry to is, let's start on the style, and obviously going away to Derby, there's certain fans and bits of the media weren't too happy that we played such a possession-based style away from home. But it did seem to me like, Sim, sometimes we made a few too many problems for ourselves passing out from the back. And following the game as I was on Twitter, it seemed like a lot of times Yarkola was making good saves off the back of giving away possession in our own sort of final third.
Yeah, particularly in the first quarter of an hour, the problems were of our own making, really. I think Gomez said after the game that the players went into it and just seemed scared of the opposition, scared of the occasion, perhaps. And yeah, for that first quarter of an hour, it just looked like they were rabbits in the headlights, almost giving the ball away far too cheaply. Yarkola and Ilori in particular, both playing some really sloppy passes that Derby perhaps should have capitalised on a bit more than they did. But although the style is... it's difficult to get right away from home. When Reading looked at their best, it was because they got the style right in the second half, when they really started to dominate possession, get on the ball, knock it about a bit. That's when we looked most dangerous and most like we were about to get back into the game, really. It was more, for me, the problem was more the system wasn't being done properly in the first half rather than the actual system itself. There was a lack of confidence, a lack of proper belief that they could play the ball around properly in the first half, and that's what Derby capitalised on, and it's something that we've got to work on for the next game.
I think it's fair enough almost for Reading to these players not to be fully confident in the system just yet, and I suppose that's almost the question, Ollie, isn't it, is that going away to somewhere like Derby, are Reading good enough, more than anything is what I think is, are we good enough to actually go away and instil our mentality on a side of better players, as we all sort of can admit in Derby. But on the other hand, I don't think there's too much point in Jose Gomez creating a sort of couple game a season counter-attacking five at the back tactical system that we know he's not going to use ever at home, and he's seldom going to use it away, because in the Championship you don't faced that many good teams. It's a bit difficult to really find too much to criticise in trusting the system if he is really going to play it 100% of the time.
No, not at all. I mean, I think this is only his fifth league game in charge, so he's still trying things out. He's still getting used to, you know, which players fit best in which positions. I mean, we went up to Old Trafford 2 weeks ago and played, you know, possession style football. We dominated possession. We had much more of the ball than United did. And, you know, we're largely commended for it and actually played very, very well for it. So I think, you know, he had every right to go up to Derby and try that possession style of football. But I think you do make a good point about the confidence, because I think we saw under Jaap Stam when they played this possession sort of based football, is that when they were winning games and when they were confident, that's when it worked really, really well, because they were happy to have the ball. You know, they wanted the ball. They were creating options for their teammates. But then when it wasn't going so well, or when they started losing games, that's when they became nervous, and that's when they were sort of shying away from wanting the ball. So I think it's always going to be natural, you know, when you have been on such a run as Reading have been on, with only, you know, two or so wins in 10, 15 games or whatever it is. But, you know, with wins, hopefully, like the one last weekend, that will, you know, slowly but surely create confidence in this side, and they will want the ball. They will want to drive Reading on, and they will want to create options for their teammates as well.
One of the things that we discussed last week on the show was Lewis Baker and Ovie Ejaria coming into the team as the only January addition so far. Lewis Baker made his full debut at Derby, but only lasted 46 minutes. I'm curious about this one, because I think this is a really interesting insight into Gomez, because Baker, as I say, only lasted 46 minutes, but he made a 94% pass success rate, the best of any player on the pitch for the game. So it's not like, as far as the stats say, he was giving the ball away a lot. But the fact that he moved Rinom Hotta to right back to allow for Baker to come in, maybe that's not so much a problem of putting Baker in, and the fact that it maybe should have been Bakuna sacrificed, in my opinion. I think if you're going to play Baker alongside Rinom Hotta, I think that's arguably a bit more sensible than Bakuna alongside Baker, because, you know, we all know that Leandro Bakuna is a bit limited, a bit inconsistent. We also all know that Rinom Hotta is a very talented midfielder. Putting him at right back, it just felt like a bit of a tactical... There's questions can be asked there, and I'd rather not Rinom Hotta be the one to be shoved out to right back when you're playing Bakuna in the centre as the one he trusts a bit more. That doesn't quite make sense to me.
Yeah, it says a lot about Gomez's style of play for me, that he really wants to make sure there's someone in the middle that can knock the ball about a bit, dictate the play and create chances from a deeper position. And in someone like Lewis Baker, you got that kind of player, somebody who can come in and knock the ball about pretty well. And as you say, he had a really good pass completion rate, I think 94%. But yeah, it's always going to be tough for a player like that to come in their first start at somewhere like Derby in a really tough first half and to look impressive.
Why do you think he got subbed after the first half then?
I think they just wanted a tactical change, and he was the spare link, the spare part at that point, to be honest. At that point, they kind of brought John Swift back into a deeper position, which is something that Gomez has done a few times before. He put Aluko higher up the pitch. I don't think it's necessarily a really bad day for Lewis Baker. He's had a not particularly good first 45 minutes, but it wasn't that catastrophic either. He'll have better days than that. Perhaps when we're playing at home against a slightly weaker side, he'll be able to be more influential and create more from deep, as we know he's capable of, but it just wasn't quite right for him. And credit to Gomez, to be fair, for making a pretty quick substitution, because in previous times we've just left it far too long to change the game, to change the team and to try different ideas. But in his defence, he did recognise that Baker wasn't quite having the influence on the game that we'd want him to, and he changed it around pretty quickly.
Yeah, I'm very happy to have a proactive manager rather than a reactive one. I certainly agree with you on that. Sticking with the Rinom Hotta point though, Ollie, because it's difficult to know necessarily who the winners and losers of this are, because I think Rinom Hotta at right back, he can do a job. It's not his best position. He can fill in there, and he's filled in there pretty much most of the games that Gomez has been been in charge of now, so it perhaps isn't too much of a surprise to see him start there. On the one hand, it's excellent for Rinomata because he's getting on the pitch no matter what, and Gomez clearly trusts him. He's an academy player, and we're all going to back that. On the other hand, it's terrible for Chris Gunter, who was on the bench. Tyler Blackett was not trusted to start with Yadon, moved over to left back. Where's your opinion on this lie? Because it's multi-layered, isn't it, really?
Mm. Well, I mean, I think he had every right to start Lewis Baker. Obviously, he came on and played very well against Forest last weekend. I think Gomez himself said he wanted more of an offensive option in that midfield, and that's why he started Lewis Baker. So, but then at the same time, Bakuna played well last weekend as well. So he's effectively trying to get in all three of Baker, Bakuna, Rinomata and Swift as well, all four of them. And obviously, Swift started the game higher up the pitch. But yeah, I think obviously we've seen Rinomata play at right back in the past. He played there at Old Trafford for a while and did very well. But yeah, I think certainly it doesn't bode well for Chris Gunter's Reading future. I think, you know, with him being a natural right back on the bench and an experienced right back at that as well. So yeah, I mean, whether Gomez sees a future for Chris Gunter at Reading, I'm not too sure. I think it was probably the right decision to take Omar Richards out of the side. He's not been terrible in recent weeks, but he's looked a little bit shaky for me, and perhaps isn't quite ready, you know, to be starting in the Championship regularly. So that was the right decision for me. But then I suppose it's then a case of who do you bring in, whether he wants to bring in another left back as well. This transfer window, obviously, with the news that Jordan Nabita's out for the season as well. So, you know, we've seen Yadon play there in the past, so it's obviously natural for him to move across to left back. But then, yeah, I think the fact that he's played Rinomata there over Chris Gunter says quite a lot, I think.
Let's move towards the top end of the pitch then. And John Daddy Bodvarsson, taken off after the hour mark, struggled once again. No goals since September for Bodvarsson. I know he's had a lot of injury problems in that, but really shows how quickly he started the season and how he's tailed off quite considerably. Sim, why do you think he did struggle up at Derby? Was it a case of not having the service? Was it just not the sort of game for him? Or does he ultimately just not fit the Gomez style that ultimately we need to find someone who does?
To be fair, it's always going to be a tough place to really make an impact as a striker, particularly if you're playing up top on your own. So judging him on that game, I think, is perhaps not too fair, because he's had better games in the past. Looked pretty good against Forest last week, for example, where he really did a good job of harrying that back line and bringing other teammates into play. But yeah, it didn't work out against Derby, but he'll have better games than that, to be honest. And going up against people like Keogh with a lot of experience, a lot of physical presence, is going to be tough for someone like Bodvarsson. I guess in general, he's just not the kind of player that is able to properly stretch a defence, get in behind and just cause those extra problems for a defence that other strikers can. And I think that's why Gomez brought him off in the end, because I think he seemed to realise that Bodvarsson didn't quite have the pace to get in behind. He didn't have that ability to stretch the defence and cause them those extra problems. And that's why Loader came on. But even with Loader, I guess he's a very inexperienced player. He's going to get better in the long run, but at the moment he doesn't quite have that game knowledge that you really need from a striker. So it's looking like we're going to have to bring someone in, but at the moment I don't know what kind of strikers we're going to be able to convince to come to a club that is battling against relegation in the Championship, especially when we've not got a huge amount of money to throw at them.
That's the thing for me when it comes to the transfer market, and I've seen a few fans on Twitter saying that we have to get a striker. It just feels to me like the strikers that we're going to be able to bring in, the idea that they're going to be better than Mate, right, Mate's a bit injured, Baldock, who seems to not really be in Gomez's mind, McNulty, Bodvarsson, and Loader, finding someone who's better or offers something different. So that quite really strong core of strikers. I don't know, do either of you think that that's possible or even worth our time?
I think it's very difficult to play as a striker in this system. I think you have to be able to hold the ball up and to be able to bring others into play. And I think Bodvarsson's probably better at doing that for me than Yaku Mate is. But I think that we've got lots of different types of strikers. I've seen Nelson Oliveira linked, whether that might be. I think if we do bring someone in, it'll probably be on a loan. But I think at the end of the day, you know, we are struggling for goals at the moment. We, you know, we scored two last week against Nottingham Forest, but before that, you know, we'd scored, I think it was 2 in 7. So, you know, obviously Mata and Bodvar started the season very well, but neither of them, I think both of them were perhaps more suited to Paul Clement's style of play than they are to Jose Gomez's. But I think, you know, there is that stark fact that we are struggling for goals at the moment. And you know, as cliched as it is, goals win you games. And if you don't score goals, then you won't be able to pick up points to get out of the relegation zone, to be honest.
Well, let's hear from the man himself, Jose Gomez. We're going to bring you, instead of me reading out the post-match comments, we're going to freshen things up with the word from the man himself, Jose Gomez, talking on where the team goes next with this 10-day break before the Bolton away game.
Recover now and after, give them very hard work and push them to start the games with the maximum strength that they have. You know, this is the only way. Again, we are in the good track because definitely we are. The players are working very well and they catch they like the idea that we play. But we must start playing like we train. Not showing to the opponent that we have afraid of what they can do to us.
One of the things that was spoken about quite a lot, certainly by Sonny Aluko, and Gomez mentioned it in his post-match press conference, was that we started the game pretty poorly, as we've alluded to earlier. That first 15 minutes, Derby really blitzed us, in which they scored. The second goal being a bit of a deflection, I think it's difficult to draw much from. But that 15-minute blitz, we survived with only conceding once. We did only have one shot in the first half, Owen. That's admittedly not really a consistent theme, because we'd have 5 versus QPR and Forest. We'd even had 6 shots against Swansea in the first half. So from this game and from what we've seen over the other 2 away games, obviously Millwall you can't really see too much from, but the QPR 0-0 draw. Sim, do you think there are any real signs that Gomez is capable of turning around our away form? Do you see legitimate steps forward that we're making under Gomez now that we weren't under Clement?
Yeah, I think there's certainly a lot more confidence shown away from home, perhaps more so than at home. There seems to be, from the players, more of a desire to actually get on the ball and express themselves. I guess it was only really the second half against Derby, but you look at the QPR game as well, Manchester United too, there was still that willingness to get onto the ball, to try and dictate play and to make the opposition counter us rather than us trying to react to what they're doing. That's always going to be difficult away from home, and turning that from just possession dominance into actually sticking the ball into the net is going to be difficult, and that's what we ran up against yesterday. We had a lot of the ball and were able to dominate proceedings, but couldn't quite open up Derby to create those extra chances. That's something we've got to work on, but at the moment I think the basic signs that we're seeing from Gomez at the moment, the way that he's getting the team playing away from home, is pretty encouraging.
Ollie, I'll give you the last word on the recap then. And really, just to look forward a little bit, obviously we'll preview the upcoming games at the end of the show, but how significant is this defeat really? It's an early goal that we bounce back from, a deflection, and then we get a goal back. And it didn't sound like we had too much for any late chances, but a 2-1 defeat away against a team that I think they've only lost twice at home all season in the league. Derby have a better squad than us. They're in better form. They just won away at a Premier League team in midweek. Ultimately, is it too much to draw any negatives out of this defeat?
Yeah, I think you said it there yourself. Derby have lost just twice all season, and Reading themselves have only won once away. So, I mean, I think to their credit, Reading, they didn't sort of get thrashed in this game. I think obviously conceding after 3 minutes, you know, you might expect the worst. Obviously, against Swansea, we conceded very early on, and then obviously went on to lose 4-1. So I think it was to Reading's credit, really, that they didn't end up getting blown away by Derby and obviously got that goal back themselves. So I think as long as, you know, we didn't have that sort of confidence, you know, losing defeat, I think, I mean, ultimately, the games against, you know, the sides around us, the game against Bolton in 10 days' time or so, Ipswich away from home and Rotherham at home, will be a lot more key games, I think, than this one. Because, as you mentioned, I think it's not really a free hit, this game. But at the same time, you know, going away to a side who's in the top six is never going to be an easy game, no matter what position in the table you're in, I think, and especially if you're fighting down the bottom. So I think, you know, we obviously won last weekend, and that generated a lot of positivity around the club. So, but I don't think that should really be all diminished by the defeat yesterday, because obviously, you know, as I said, we didn't get thrashed, and there are much, much more important games coming up. And I think, you know, obviously, if we lose those games, then that might be the time to start getting a bit worried. But I think for now, you know, as long as, you know, that these players can learn from this defeat, and that they take, you know, lessons into the games against Bolton, Ipswich and Rotherham, and hopefully they'll set themselves up very well for them to survive relegation.
Yeah, hopefully Reading can enjoy the 10-day break they have, having not been into the FA Cup fourth round, and then that Bolton game we'll be talking about later in the show. But we're now going to move on to Pub Chat, where we're going to be choosing the all-time Loneys 11 of Reading Football Club.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. Read the blog on thetarlhurstend.com.
Those of you who listened to the show last week will remember, hopefully, that Michael Hall sent us in a tweet saying, have you ever debated the best Loney 11? And, well, that's exactly what we're going to do this week, Michael, in the Pub Chat Loney 11 selection. And, guys, we're going to have to start off with the goalkeepers, of course. Just a bit of a proviso that I've gone through quite a significant number of seasons to detect all our Loneys, but the 90s seasons, a little bit before my time, such as the awful mid-20s human that I am, and also the Wikipedia sections for Reading FC's transfers in the 90s, not quite as thorough as the modern sections. You can blame the quality of the team for that, mainly, in my eyes. So let's start with the goalkeeper then, and the three that have been highlighted, shout out to Brian Davis on Twitter and Royalty Points as well for some of the older suggestions that have come through. We've got Jim Leighton as a goalkeeper in the 91-92 season, a verified Scottish international who came from Manchester United as Peter Schmeichel came in and ousted him. They've got Marcus Hanneman and Graham Stack as well. Graham Stack, the backup in 05-06. So I think I'm probably going to have to start off and give this one to Jim Leighton, because generally speaking, we haven't really signed any good goalkeepers on loan for, you know, ever.
No, obviously, Hanneman obviously did very well when he came in on the permanent. Obviously, he was part of the 05-06 championship winning side. But I don't think he played much at all when he came in on loan. I don't think he was first choice. So it was only, you know, I think this will be the case with a lot of these loan players, that we might have signed them on loan to begin with, and it might not have done so well there, but then they obviously became them regulars when we signed them permanently. So, yeah, I mean, obviously I never saw Jim Leighton play, but I would have to give it to him as well, yeah.
See, many arguments with that. Based on, let's just make it clear that this is the selection based on how they did while on loan. So, obviously, Hanneman had a very good career permanently, as Ollie says, but we are going to purely stick to the temporary period they spent at the club.
Yeah, no arguments for that.
So let's go on to the defence then. And I'm going to throw out a plethora of names here. So perhaps take some notes as we go. We've got Steve Moore in 1991, David Lee in the same season, Matt Upson, 2002-2003, Peter Mate, you know, that defender who scored against Darlington in 2006-07, then got crocked and left again. Andre Bique made 21 appearances in 06-07. Dan Harding, the left-back saviour of 2008-09. Ryan Bertrand, who made 51 appearances the season after that. Darren O'Dea, Zurab Kijanishvili, made 42 appearances in two spells, 09-2011. Andy Griffin in 09-10, 25 appearances before signing permanently. Bongani Kamalo, 2011-2012. Matt Connolly, same season. Nathan Ake, Reese Oxford, some other names to throw out there. So I think it's really difficult. Two names that I'm going to throw in straight away. Bertrand and Griffin. I think those two fullbacks were absolutely outstanding for what they came in. And teams that team that season really needed some defensive stability, and the way they played I thought was excellent. What other names would you throw in from there, Sim?
Andre Bique for me. Bit of a character, to say the least, particularly that incident up at Burnley in the playoff semi-finals, when I think he tore off his shirt in sheer frustration at being sent off. But yeah, he had a big impact. I thought he was a very good centre half for us, very strong, very very dominant physically, and someone I enjoyed watching.
I'm also going to name Matt Upson as one of mine in there. So, Ollie, if we're going to throw BK Upson and potentially one more, then we'll pick two out of those three. What sort of names sprung up from that on your list?
I think for me, I'd have to say Nathan Ake. I think, I mean, obviously, he only played, you know, four or five games for us 3 years or so ago, but it was incredibly evident, much like when Ryan Bertrand was here, it was very, very evident that Nathan Ake was destined for a very good future in football. And, you know, just his composure on the ball, I think he was excellent in the tackle as well. And it's not a surprise at all to see that he's now doing very, very well in the Premier League with Bournemouth. And I think he might even have got his first cap for the Dutch national team as well. So, yeah, it's no surprise to me that he's now doing very well.
Yeah, I think Ake was an interesting one, because I remember watching him and thinking, there's a player who, obviously, as a defender, he had the technique of a midfielder, and I was watching him thinking, surely he's not actually a defender. We should be playing him in centre mid, because, you know, when you've got the best player who is head and shoulders above the rest in terms of technique, you kind of want him in amongst the best position. So, yeah, I really did think Ake was decent. Anyone, what about Zurab Khizanishvili? I think his role in Reading Football Club, perhaps a little bit underrated, because he, you know, was on loan, and those two seasons obviously got to the playoff final. I think the problem with Khizanishvili's legacy as a Reading player was that playoff final, his last appearance in 2011, was probably one of the worst defensive performances that's been conducted for the decade almost.
Yeah, I think that does tarnish his reputation slightly. But, I mean, from my memories of Khizanishvili is that he was a very, very solid defender. I think generally a very popular guy to have around the place as well. You know, he had a good partnership with Matt Mills in the centre of defence. But, yeah, no, he's a very, very popular guy. But I think it's always quite hard. I mean, it's hard to erase the memories of that day in general against Swansea, but it's hard to erase Khizanishvili's performance specifically.
Yeah, well, I think for the purpose of Aloni's 11, I'm going to make an executive decision and place Bertrand, Griffin, Upson and Ake as the four talented defenders into that lineup. And into the midfield we go. I'll throw out a couple names to begin with. Then Mark McKeever from 1999, John Sulaco coming in alongside Kevin Watson in that promotion-winning 2001-02 season. And then one of the first names I remember coming through as I started watching was Luke Chadwick in 2002-2003. He had an excellent spell at the club, as it's probably one of his best spells in English football in general, as we reached the playoffs and had to really fight to keep hold of him as well, actually. Glenn Little in 2003-2004 made only six appearances before later coming back into the team, obviously, as we all know. And Omar Daly, I don't know if either of you guys can remember Omar Daly, was a Jamaican winger who, I think maybe it's just my youthful naivety, got a bit excited by thinking that he was going to be quite flash and quite quick, but perhaps not the finished article. I think he ended up at Bradford. So of those early names, Sim, which do you think were a potentials for this midfield?
Probably Luke Chadwick out of those players.
Yeah, I think Kevin Watson is one that's also been recommended on Twitter. I think he's got a good shot at being in there. Depends how they match up against the other names I'm going to name. The more modern ones, Sekou Baraji, who came in 2005-06, who set up Brynjar Gunnarsson's winner in that title sort of deciding clash against Sheffield United. I think he only played that one game in the league. Michele Legittwood made 29 appearances in 2010-11. Hayden Mullins with a very important late season run in 2012. Jamie Mackey is one that actually made a really big impact in 14-15, as did Nathaniel Chalobah. And then a couple other names to throw in of the slightly less renowned sort, Alex Fernandez, Lucas Piazon, Ola John and Jordan Much. So, Ollie, if you had to pick a three- or four-man midfield out of that selection, where would you be going?
The ones I've highlighted here for me, I've got Legend with Mackey and Chalobah. I mean, I think we had a comment on Twitter the other day about this very same question, and I looked it up, and Michele Legittwood, I think we didn't lose any of his first 19 games that he played in the league for Reading, which is an incredible record, really. And I think we only lost two out of 21 in total out of the games that he played in his lone season. And obviously, then did very well permanently as well. Mackey, as you say, I think, you know, obviously not massively popular now because obviously, you know, first of all, he's gone to Oxford, but also when he came back to Medeski with QPR and obviously scored against Reading and did quite an elaborate celebration in front of the stand, which I don't think went down very well. But I don't think you can ignore the impact that he had when he was here. Obviously scored the third goal in that 3-0 win over Bradford in the FA Cup quarterfinal as well, that will live long in the memory, and you know, scored some other key goals as well. And then Chalobah as well. I think very much like Ake, it was very, very clear. I think, you know, he played quite a lot more than Ake, but it was very clear that Chalobah, you know, was a class above most of the players we had at the time. You know, played very well in the FA Cup semi-final as well, you know, if I remember, Chalobah. So, you know, for me, you know, three names from that midfield would probably be Ledgerwood, Mackie and Chalobah from the more modern era, I suppose.
I think I'm going to be slightly cheekier and insist on a five-man midfield because I've looked ahead at the strikers and honestly, the strikers we've signed on loan have been just bad, I'm afraid. So in a five-man midfield, I completely agree on Ledgerwood and Mackie. I think I'd throw in Chadwick and probably Kevin Watson in as well because the impact they had certainly Kevin Watson at a very vital time in that season was you know, so probably very underestimated in the football club and its history. Sim, where would you go on someone like Chalobah or Mullins, maybe again another player who came in on a really important time for the club and just helped guide it in the right direction?
Yeah, Mullins was important for us at the end of that season. I know I don't think he scored a goal or anything. He didn't play a huge amount of games, but the injuries really started to pile up at the end of that season. We were playing, I think, Thomas Sifka and Hayden Mullins in midfield for some games, which wasn't ideal, but it helped us get over the line. And for a guy to come in midway through the season into a side that was already performing so well, for him to essentially keep up their work when someone is influential and as important as Cem Karaca'n was out injured, it reflects really well on him, to be honest. More recently than him, I would tentatively float Ola John. I know he's not a real star player. He was capable of going missing at the end of games quite often, but when he did turn it on, he had a really great technique and he was capable of scoring a really good goal or two. I remember that one up against Bolton from way far out, a really good technique, the kind of technique you don't usually see at Reading.
Yeah, Ola John really fitting into that classic Reading category of talented players who just couldn't fully provide that potential on any consistent basis, sadly, at the club. I totally agree that goal Bolton was a ridiculously good last minute winner, and nine times out of ten probably would have ended up in the second tier at the Reebok. So let's move on to the attack then, and I think it is probably only going to be one absolute maximum two names we're going to pick out of the ones that I found from here. Lloyd Owusu in 2003-04 scored four goals. Dave Kitson grabbed a couple in 2008-09 on his little comeback. There's Benik Afobe. Billy Sharp got a two in ten in 13-14, Glenn Murray got 8 in 18 in 14-15, Matej Vidva scored 9 goals but in 36 appearances, Lewis Graben scored 3 in 19, and Chris Martin most recently in 17-18, he scored 1 goal in 10 appearances. And really, Ollie, there's some very good strikers in there, but not a lot of goals.
I mean, it's incredible really when you look at those names, the likes of Billy Sharp, Matej Vidra, Lewis Graben, Chris Martin, you know, who have all been fantastic championship strikers over the last 5 or 10 years. But, you know, for seemingly every single club apart from Reading. I mean, Lewis Graben, obviously, since leaving Reading, did incredibly well at both Sunderland and at Villa last season. He's doing very, very well at Nottingham Forest this season. Matej Vidra has done incredibly well at Derby after leaving Reading from that one. Billy Sharp is obviously absolutely smashing them in. And for Sheffield United at the moment, I saw a stat the other day, something like he's got the most goals in the top four leagues of English football or something like that, just beating Jamie Cureton over the last sort of 15 years. But yeah, I think the one for me from that one would have to be Glenn Murray. I think I genuinely think without Murray's goals in the first half of 14-15, we really could have gone down that season. I think it's hard to sort of understate the impact that he had. I mean, I know he scored, I think it was twice on his debut, against Fulham, and just those goals, you know, in the first half of that season, I think really did genuinely save our season. It was gutting to lose him, In January, obviously, he's done very well since with both Bournemouth and getting Brighton up to the top flight. And, you know, I think he's probably 34, 35 now, but still bagging them in the Premier League. So, yeah, I think Glenn Murray, for me, had the biggest impact at Reading out of all of those options.
Yeah, isn't it weird, Sim, that Glenn Murray and Simon Cox was arguably the last good strike partnership we've had at the club since, I mean, Jason Robertson, Noel Hunt is the only other one in the years before that that really brings to mind. Like, it's a strange one to look back on and think that that season was a year when we actually had, in the first 6 months anyway, a really good dynamic attack, and as Ollie said, arguably saved us from going down.
Yeah, absolutely. And for me, Murray is one of those players that I think of all the lone players that you just read out, he's one of the ones that you really want to keep, and you really would have been interested to see how he would have done if he'd stayed for the next couple of years, if we'd maybe had a bit more stability at the club and had a bit more money to hopefully bring him in on a permanent deal. If he'd maybe stayed for a couple of more years after that, perhaps we could have built up a little bit more and he would have been banging in the goals for us regularly as he's done for Brighton in the last couple of years. So really frustrating that we couldn't keep him any longer than we did. But he just had that great knack for just being in the right place at the right time. Really good finisher, really composed finisher. And we were talking earlier about having a striker who can play up top on his own and bring others into the game. Glenn Murray is exactly that kind of person that you want. He's got a huge threat, both in terms of his all-round play and in terms of finishing. So what I'd give for someone like him in our current side.
Glenn Murray, then, the comfortable lonely striker of Reading FC history. And yeah, just compared to the likes of Vidra and Graben, you do wonder if Reading could have made all those click, then we might be in a very, very, very different position to what we're in now. But alas, here we are in the Championship relegation zone in our, you know, something natural habitat, as it's come in the last 12 months. So we'll be moving on now to the next part of the show and the mailbag, where we'll be talking about team selection and all sorts more on the football club.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at the Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/thetarlhurstend.
Thank you to everyone who continues to get in touch with the Twitter and Facebook, and also on the email, thetarlhurstend@gmail.com. Speaking of which, Dadjo87 has done just that and emailed us this week saying, last week on the podcast, Gomez was praised for consistency in team selection and tactics, leading to a settled midfield and defence. This was used in contrast to Clement, who was criticised for tinkering with the starting lineup and disrupting the team. If Clement had been in charge and made the change to the starting lineup that Gomez made against Derby, would certain fans have been as forgiving as they have for Gomez, who they like personally and whose style of play they admire? Before the defence of Rinham Hotter has played right back before, there is a difference between a player filling in at right back for 45 minutes and starting there. I like Gomez too, but he's not immune from criticism, as some fans, including some who are involved in finding content for the Tarlhurst End, seem to desperately want him to be. Now, this is a very interesting point, and I mean, it's not one I preempted deliberately earlier by talking about Rinham Hotter at right back, because it was genuinely a question I wanted to raise. But I mean, let's start with you, Sim. The point with the Gomez perhaps being a bit immune from criticism, let's take that on like on its own and isolate that for a moment. Do you think this is something that actually is happening to begin with? And secondly, do you think it's perhaps natural for fans when a new manager is in, and as Dadjo says here about, you know, the fact that a lot of fans seem to have taken to him personally always has an impact, but perhaps fans are right to give a new manager a little bit of time and a little bit of leeway to get things different, because at the end of the day, he's only been in charge for 4 or 5 games.
I wouldn't say he's completely immune to criticism, to be honest, because when he has got it wrong in his last couple of games, we have seen the criticism come out, particularly with that Rinham Hotter change. A lot of people did take to that quite badly after the game. But I think it's only fair, it's only right that if a manager comes in, he's going to have a couple of games, maybe up to maybe as many as 10 games, to be honest, to have a little bit of a honeymoon with the fans, to really just not have the pressure, to be honest, because it's not his side for the most part. Generally speaking, this is a team that has been seriously underperforming under well, Clement and Stam, and he's only had, what, half a transfer window so far to go about changing that, and even then he doesn't have the funds to really change things a huge amount. So you can criticise him by all means, and I'd criticise his decision to put Rinomota at right back. It was, in hindsight, a needless change. I like the idea of bringing Baker in, but to reshuffle the defence and midfield to that extent wasn't quite right, and hopefully that's something that Jose Gomez learns from. But he is going to get things wrong this early on in his time at Reading, especially when he's not managed in England before and he's having to adapt himself. He is going to get things wrong. We have to accept that.
Well, Lee, we have gone over our thoughts on Rinomota at right-back earlier in the show. So to move it on a little bit then, if he plays Rinomota at right-back at Bolton, will you sit there as the team sheet comes out and say, OK, fair enough, not too much reason to change? Or will you say, you know, this is getting a bit... For the odd game, we can accept someone going back there and only criticise a bit, but if he persists with it, that might be going a bit too far.
Yeah, I think I would be a bit disappointed. I think, especially considering, you know, what happened at Derby, I think you would hope that he is, you know, strong-minded enough to learn from that. I think, obviously, one thing that Yap Stam was criticised for a fair amount was being quite stubborn, you know, with his systems, you know, and wasn't quite willing to change things. But, you know, I don't get the sense that Gomez is that sort of person. But I think, you know, we discussed the options that he's got at the back. He can bring Gunter in there. You know, he can move Yeardon back over to right back and play either Blackett or Richards there if he wants to. I mean, Thiago Alori's even played at right back earlier in the season under Paul Clement and played very, very well there. So he has got options there. So I think, you know, it would be foolish if he was to, you know, keep Rinomota there at right back. But I think, you know, he I think he would have gauged the reaction from yesterday. I know Tim Della, you know, to his credit, Della, you know, pushed Gomez quite well on the whole Rinomota selection issue, and Gomez wasn't really that willing to answer, because I'm not actually sure he really had an answer as to why he played Rinomota at right back. I mean, as I said earlier in the show, I felt it was probably justified in the fact that he wanted to bring a more offensive option into midfield with Lewis Baker. But I think, you know, I would hope that he's learnt now that Rinomota is best used in midfield.
Yeah, I think my closing thoughts on this particular debate is that if Reading had no available fullbacks, then you can make a much better case for it. But Reading had Blackett and Richards and Gunter on the bench, and if Gomez doesn't want to use any of them, then he should, you know, they should be on the transfer list or something else. But at the end of the day, if you're moving your right back to left back and you're centre mid to right back while having three fullbacks on the bench, that is something that I'm not a fan of, let's put it that way. And similarly, Dan Wimbush sends in a question saying, do you mind managers tinkering in games when we're not expected to win? One of the games that I'd link that kind of back to, Sim, is when Paul Clement took us into the game at West Brom earlier in the season in a kind of 3-4-3, I guess kind of matching up to West Brom is what he was trying to do. And Reading played very well for the first half, but ended up getting beat 4-1. Do you mind, the general question, do you mind managers tinkering in games we're not expected to win? Is it, as we were saying earlier, is Derby a little bit of a free hit for teams like Reading? Is it a game when you expect tactical deviations, or is it a good chance in your mind for the manager to say, you know, this is going to be a day to really drill home on what we're meant to be good at, kind of what Gomez did do, and say, you know, we're going to use this as an opportunity to build confidence in an existing system?
I expect them to make tactical changes in any game, to be honest. With any match, you have to adapt your team in order to deal with the circumstances you've got in that match. If you want your team to be better on the ball and dominate possession a bit more, and presumably that's what Gomez wanted with Baker coming into the midfield, then you make the changes accordingly. You don't... to be honest, I think the idea of a consistent team is a little bit... it can be a little bit overstated. You shouldn't just keep the same team every week because you think that is going to play exactly as well every week. Sometimes you do need to make those little changes just to keep the momentum, to give you fresh ideas. Even if you play well and get a win, as we did last week, there are still improvements that you can make. And if Gomez looks at that performance against Nottingham Forest and thinks Reading can do better here or here, whilst making such and such changes, then he should do that. And it doesn't look as good in hindsight, obviously, when Reading have really struggled in the first half, and that's what's costing the game against Derby. But the idea was right, and we could alternatively have been sat here thinking just how good Lewis Baker had played for the full game if that had come off. So some decisions he's going to get right, others he's not, but we have to let him make those mistakes and hopefully let the team grow and learn from it.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, I think we lost by a single goal, one of which was a deflection. So I don't think there's too much, you know, even with the Winamoto right-back argument, I don't think there's too much to criticise Gomez for after this game. And if we had been beaten 4-0 with the same performance, then I'd have said that we can criticise him because it's a results-based business, and the result wasn't too bad. It wasn't good, but it wasn't too bad. It could have been a lot worse for Reading on the weekend. And final question then comes from another friend of the show, Steve Curtis, aka Royal Hoops, who says, is it too soon for Danny Loader to be getting games? He doesn't look ready. And Ollie, this comes back to the point that we were saying earlier in the show about the strikers and how none of them are quite hitting form, and signing a striker, I think signing a striker at the moment would probably mean sending Loader out on loan. And what do you think's best for Loader at the moment? Is it that loan spell in League 1, League 2 to maybe get 20 starts in or 15 starts in between now and the end of the season? Or is it being a bit of a squad player for Reading and getting those minutes off the bench?
I think Loader fully deserved his chance when he came in sort of October, November time. I think obviously he'd been banging them in for the academy teams and doing very well for England's youth teams as well. So I think he fully deserved his chance. And obviously there were a lot of fans sort of clamouring for him to get into the team. And, you know, with the way things were going and the poor form, he fully deserved the opportunity. You know, now he's got the opportunity. I think, you know, we have a habit really at Reading of sort of clamouring for these young players and then getting on their backs, you know, when they're not doing so well. And I think especially it's especially hard for a young player to come into a team that's underperforming, you know, because, you know, first you've got pressure on that young player to try and change those fortunes around. But also at the same time, it's very hard for him coming into a team that is low on confidence, isn't creating that many chances, and to come in and have an impact. I mean, I think he's had his good games, he's had his bad games. You know, he certainly adds something different to the attack. He's not, you know, a similar striker to the likes of Mate or Bovarsson. He's only 18 or 19 years old. So, you know, he's never, I mean, I think very few players are instantly ready, you know, for the championship without having a loan spell. So I think if we did bring someone in, that would be wise to let Loader go out on loan. But I mean, if no one does come in, I think he'd certainly be a good option to have in the squad, you know, if no one else does come in.
Yeah, the only worry that I really have with sending Loader out on loan is you've got to, I think Gomez would be right to demand that he goes to a team with a similar philosophy. If you send him to a team that lumps it up to 6'5" strikers, that's not what he is. Maybe you can feed off the knockdowns, but you've got to make use of him. And he is clearly a technical player. He is clearly someone who likes to play in the possession sort of mould. And finding that team that can fulfil that and fulfil it properly in the lower leagues is difficult. So for now, I think we're just about finding the right solution with him. The thing is with a striker, and I suppose this is a pretty obvious point, but if he was coming into a team that was scoring goals for fun, then he probably would find it a lot easier to score goals for fun. But alas, that's not the case, and that's just how it is. So we'll track how Danny Loader gets on in the next few weeks, and the transfer window, of course, which is, you know, slowly coming to an end. And I think Reading won't even be playing again. Actually, yeah, we've got one more game we'll be playing until the transfer window comes to a close. That's Bolton on the 29th of January, that Tuesday night trip to Lancashire. And that and a couple other games we'll be focusing on in any other business.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. Any other business.
Right, let's look at the next three games then to round off this show. Bolton away, Aston Villa at home, and Sheffield Wednesday away. And Sim, let's start with that huge Bolton game. It feels, I mean, asking you the question, is it a must win, feels a bit redundant, because I think we all agree at the moment, before you kick a ball, I think it has to be considered a must win. But Sonny Aluko is the man who came off the bench. He's come off the bench a couple of times and looked quite good, scored against Derby. Do you think he has to start at Bolton now?
Yeah, absolutely. He's coming into form now, and you really just want him to carry that on as much as possible. I think Reading have a little bit of a decision to make in that attacking three at the moment, the three that play behind Bodvarsson in the 4-2-3-1. We lack pace and movement when we play Ajaria, to be honest. He looked tidy on his debut against Nottingham Forest, but he doesn't have that pace and movement to really get in behind the defence and to really stretch them. He did well in the build-up for Aluko's goal, but in the rest of the game, he didn't get in behind. He didn't beat his man, really take him on and stretch the Derby defence as much as you want a wide player to do. And for me, bringing Sonny Aluko into that role, I know he's done well in the number 10 role quite centrally recently. For me, getting him into the side, and even if it means putting him out onto the right where he can cut in on his left, it's better to play him there than not at all and have him coming on off the bench.
Yeah, Gomez has mentioned about him playing on the wing and says he doesn't necessarily work hard enough to justify that role, which is something he doesn't, theoretically anyway. Gomez saying he doesn't have to work as hard defensively when he plays in that number 10 role. And I understand your point about Jaya, but the fact that he won possession back for Luko's goal kind of insinuates to me that he will stay in the team because he is doing that extra bit of pressing and stuff that Gomez wants. So, I mean, Ollie, is it worth... John Swift has been very good in that number 10 role for all intents and purposes last couple of weeks. Is it worth moving Swift around to fit Aluko in, or are you on Sim's side? Do you think that Aluko should be playing down the wing?
Oh, I would have Aluko in that number 10 role, to be honest. I think even before he came to Reading, I think a lot of people had said that that's his best position. I think he played very well there when he was up in Scotland with Rangers and with Aberdeen. And he's definitely playing some of his best football now. You know, whether that's because it's Jose Gomez or whether that's because he's playing in the number 10 role. But I think, you know, we saw yesterday, you know, he accommodated both Swift and Aluko by moving Swift sort of deeper, which I think Swift is more than comfortable. I think he's probably better as the number 10, but you can only have one number 10, of course. So, I would have Aluko in the number 10 role and then keep Ajaria out wide with probably Bakuna and Swift in the holding role. And then, you know, maybe the Mo Barrow or Gareth McCleary out on the wing probably.
Yeah, after that, Reading then have Aston Villa at home. Feels like a good time to play them, really. One win in nine, they've got, although they are a little bit more comfortable on the road where they've won three of their last six. And then Sheffield Wednesday away, which is going to be Steve Bruce's first home game in charge. They're kind of finding a bit of form now. Haven't lost at home. I think they've got five unbeaten at Hillsborough now. And I mean, final points on the next three games then, guys. Is it pretty much as good as we can really ask for in terms of form now? These next three games now, Sim, we'll start with you, are the point where we have to say, you know what, Gomez has had his bedding in period. He's clearly got a decent idea of his formation and his personnel. We'll have the transfer window sorted out in a couple weeks. This is it now. There's almost, after these three games, or for these three games, it's kind of a case of no more excuses.
Yeah, absolutely. This is where he needs to start picking up points. If he doesn't do it in the next three games, or ones that are, they look like ones that Reading can win if they turn up and play well enough. If we can manage that, then we should hopefully get the points on the board. But it's about Gomez adapting and learning from what he's already seen in the first half a dozen games he's had at the club. If he can adapt from that and work out how to get Reading to start winning games, then we should be fine. But it's a big test for him.
And Ollie, what do you think about the capability of Reading? Is there a genuine sense of confidence for the next three games that we can go and, I mean, 6 points, I think we'd all agree, have been absolutely fabulous. 5 points as well, probably be very decent. How confident are you really that we're going to be able to get that?
I think I've been boosted by last week's win over Nottingham Forest. I think that's given the whole sort of club a bit of a lift they needed. They played all right yesterday. They, as I said earlier, they didn't go and get thrashed, so that's a positive. Every game in the Championship is going to be a difficult game, especially when you're, down at the bottom of the table. I mean, we haven't won two consecutive games in a row for well over a year. We've only won one away game all season, so it is important not to get ahead of ourselves and, you know, take each game as it comes. And, you know, Bolton are, you know, they'll be seeing this game much as Reading will be seeing it. As much as Reading will, you know, see this as a must-win game, so will Bolton. You know, they'll know that if they, you know, lose this game, then they'll be in a lot of trouble just as much as Reading will be. So I think that certainly won't be an easy game. You know, Villa, obviously, they have been struggling recently, but they've got some very good players. You know, Tammy Abraham was touted for a move to Wolves this month. Jonathan Codger scores a lot of goals as well. I think only Norwich and West Brom have actually only scored more goals than Villa in the Championship so far this season. You know, so whilst they've not been on great form lately, you know, they've got a lot of players on that side who can hurt you. Sheffield Wednesday's a bit of a bizarre one, really, because obviously, you know, I think Bruce has had his two assistants take charge of the last couple of games before he comes in. So it'll be interesting sort of to see whether, you know, that new manager bounce effect will really be in full effect, because obviously he's had the two guys in there coming in before him. But I would bite your hand off for 6 points, to be honest with you. I think it's probably the home games we've got to be looking at, especially. So I think we've got a better chance maybe of, or, you know, we should be getting something against Villa more than we should be against Sheffield Wednesday. But that Bolton game on a Tuesday night as well will be, I think that's, it might not be as key as perhaps the Rotherham game coming up, you know, in a month or so time. But, you know, when you're in a position at Reading, you're in the games you've got to win are the games that against teams around you. So,
well, I won't press you for any predictions just now, because we have got a little bit of a break before the Bolton game, as I say, because we're not on FA Cup action on the weekend, and that also means that this show is most likely to return after the Aston Villa game, as we'll have a short sabbatical and a week off before coming back to talk about those two games. And Ollie, weekend preview, I presume at some point in between the Bolton and Villa games.
So obviously there's no weekend game this coming weekend, so there'll be no show then, but yeah, there'll be a weekend preview. I'm looking ahead to the Aston Villa game in a fortnight's time.
Excellent. So last word then for the episode of the show is going to the Prediction League, where a surprisingly positive amount of predictions for the Derby game meant that only Johnny Williams and Tom Crocker got the correct defeat prediction. And Tom Crocker, congratulations for the first correct scoreline as well. He said 2-1 for the first time. He's got the 3 points on the board, but alas, I believe he's still bottom of the table. So, Tom, decent shout there, and the rest of us was obviously clearly too positive at the moment, which can't be a bad thing about the club at the moment. So, cheers, Sim, for popping on and discussing Reading this afternoon.
It's quite right. Thanks for having me on.
And thanks, Ollie. We'll be back with you in about just a week and a bit now.
Indeed, yeah. Thanks so much, Mark.
And thank you, everyone, for listening to this show. We'll be back in about a fortnight, which means we have a nice little time to sit back and watch the upsets on the weekend, and then we get back into some really big business into the next three games. Bolton away, Villa at home, and Sheffield Wednesday away. As I say, this really is the time now for the excuses and any sort of doubts around Jose Gomez and anything to go away, and this is all about the results from here on in. And who knows, maybe the next time we reconvene for this podcast, we'll have a few new signings to discuss as well, and some new strikers to fire us to safety. Come on, you arse.
Smile, funny how the crumbs always leave a trail, even when it seems it's on your